helping lift up the girls of the world through school. That conversation's just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Well, just ahead, how the United Nations and Jacksonville University are coming together to promote education for women and girls around the world. You can get on the line now to join in the discussion at 549-2937. Then later, it's a big advance for people in this area who have autism. We'll tell you about it. Plus, The Spectator with some ideas for your weekend. All of that ahead. Plus, we'll have a live report from the Shrimp and Grits Festival up on Jekyll Island. All of that coming up, but first this hour, still lots of discussion this morning after last night's GOP debate on CNN. The one-woman candidate on the stage, Carly Fiorina, received a lot of positive attention for her performance. From that, we want to look ahead this morning now to an important event happening on the JU campus next week, promoting gender equality. In many developing countries, girls and women are denied the ownership of land, the right to own a business, the right to go to school, the right to representation in court, the right to choose whom they marry, the right to decisions about their reproductive health, and the right to vote. Girls that are denied an education have diminished opportunities both here and around the world. They're more vulnerable to HIV and AIDS, early and forced marriage, and all forms of violence. But when a girl can get a quality education, she's more likely to earn a living, raise a healthy family, educate her own kids, and improve the quality of life for herself and her entire community. If you educate a girl, you lift up the entire community. Now, all of this will be on the table at the Girl Up United Nations Association discussion. It's coming up Monday night on the JU campus, and we've got a closer look right now with JU biology professor Karen Jackson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Amy Stalker, sponsor of the Girl Up Club of Fleming Island High School.
Good morning.
Hey, Amy. And Amy's student Rachel Thompson, she's a junior at Fleming Island High and the president of the Girl Up Club. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
And when it comes to lifting up the girls and women of the world, give us a call with your thoughts and questions about this, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Amy, let's begin with you. The reason I mentioned the debate from last night is I was curious to notice on social media, most of the discussion that came out of that Republican debate seemed to center around the one woman candidate on the stage. So it's sort of timely to pivot off that to this whole endeavor that's happening at JU promoting gender equality. Let's begin by explaining what Girl Up is all about. You're the president of the, or you're the sponsor. I should say, of the club at Fleming Island High School. What is Girl Up?
So Girl Up goes along with United Nations goal number 3, which is to promote gender equality and empower women. So we go around and try to raise money for Girl Up. We advocate for Girl Up, and this is the biggest program that we've done thus far.
That's right. And it's growing at Fleming Island High School. Rachel, you are the club president.
Yes.
You and another student had the opportunity to go through the help of the UN and the State Department to Rwanda. Mm-hmm. What happened there?
Well, we went to Rwanda to attend the WISAI 2015 camp. And what it stands for is Women in Science. So it promoted women in STEM fields, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And there we were taught classes through Microsoft and Intel, and we were also taught classes in leadership and how to become a leader in our community and how to fight against the gender gap.
And what did you observe in Rwanda when it comes to that? How does that country fare as compared to, say, the United States?
Actually, in Rwanda, the government, it's 50-50. There's 50% women that are represented in their government, and 50% men, whereas here it's less than that.
So Rwanda's doing a lot better than we are.
It is.
Give us a call with your thoughts, 549-2937, to discuss this. Karen Jackson, professor at JU. This event Monday night will focus on education for women and girls worldwide, in particular STEM fields, science, tech, engineering, and math. Is that right?
Correct. Very proud that Jacksonville University is able to sponsor this event. Hopefully it'll provide a wider platform for all of the girls of Duval County. and Clay County, right, Fleming Island. But at Jacksonville University, it's not just a one-time event. It's something that we live and breathe every single day. Teaching in the STEM fields, I do see some of the struggles that girls have. All the data seems to show that starting young, girls like science. They like math. It's one of their favorite subjects. And the older they get, the farther along they get in their education, they fall by the wayside, they drop. And some recent studies have shown that the role of the teacher, the role of the professor, plays as much as anything to do with that decision. If I think my student can do it, my student will do it. Mm-hmm. My students will rise to my challenge. If I put that bias on them, then they'll think they can't do it. So having someone believe in them is very important. And of course, there's also been a lot of discussion lately in higher ed about the cost and student loans. And so we were fortunate enough to obtain funding from the National Science Foundation, upwards of $500,000 to support 14 students every year to defray the cost. And our emphasis is on underrepresented students. So we are targeting minorities and women specifically in the STEM fields so that that burden's taken away. They don't have to worry about how am I going to pay for this. They can worry about their studies and hopefully succeed.
And to our callers, what are your thoughts about gender inequality, whether it's on the campaign trail or in the classroom? Give us a call at 549-2937. Amy, the U.S. ranks 47th out of 187 countries on the United Nations Gender Equality Index, the U.S. 54th when it comes to women's political empowerment on their Gender Gap Index. There is such a thing. There is an official Gender Gap Index. Let's discuss what that's all about.
Okay, so in the U.S., women are usually 20 to 30% of in the legislature, whichever scale, national to
or state,
or state, or
yeah.
even
or local.
Local.
That's what we have locally too. Yeah.
So we're much behind in that aspect, and then also we have a pay gap of about 78 cents to what a white male would make. So there's also the pay gap.
And people might not realize that about this country. We tend to think of the U.S. as we're number one. Well, yeah. we're not. There are other less developed countries, in fact, that are a lot further ahead of us. Why do you think that is?
Well, in Rwanda in particular, they passed a law that women needed to be represented equally in their government. So that's why they are 50-50 now. Mm-hmm. But there's still a huge pay gap and a huge bias towards men in other areas. Now, in the U.S., we don't have any laws like that. So,
right. And so, Rachel, you're our high school student. What do you think about when you look at your own home country? What do you see as an emerging young woman? You're a junior in high school. You've had the benefit now of going overseas. What do you think are the biggest obstacles in this country to gender equality?
I think we need to promote the fact that girls can do the jobs that most men are seen to do, like become a doctor, become a president, become an engineer. Like, they can do that. We need to promote that and not have as many misconceived ideas that women can't accomplish that.
Mm-hmm. What else?
I just think that it needs to be promoted and that we need to be further educated on how to become a better leader as a woman, and with that we'll gain the confidence to go into engineering, to go into STEM fields, and to further our education. I definitely think that the inequality in between men and women in the U.S. is a rising issue, and a lot of people who are from my generation, they see this, and it's very important to them. I definitely think change needs to come.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Let's go to Karen Jackson. Last night, as I mentioned, the debate that aired on CNN last night did feature, has one female candidate, Carly Fiorina, former CEO of Hewlett-Packard. The front runner on the Democratic side is a woman, of course, Hillary Clinton. And many might point to that and women rising in business and say, well, we don't really have an issue with this anymore in this country. What would you say to that, Professor Jackson?
I would say that it's getting better, but we're not there yet. We're not at 50%. The percentage of women that do lead Fortune 500 companies is still, I believe, in the single digits. I'm getting a 4%. And so we're not there. If you look at the leaders in higher education, the presidents at universities and the provosts at universities, women are still the minority. I'm proud to say that at Jacksonville University, our chief academic officer is a woman. And actually, in my division, in the Division of Science and Math, which houses the STEM disciplines, I didn't do the math, but we're at least 40% female, if not more. Those of us that are involved in the grant, it's 50-50. So there are a lot of very strong, I believe, role models for our mm-hmm. women and our men at Jacksonville University to see that the job isn't gender-specific. To have a love and passion and understanding of science, it has nothing to do with your chromosomes.
And Amy, role models are key. If a young girl sees an adult woman doing a job or performing in a certain role, they're more likely to be able to visualize themselves doing that as an adult, correct?
Yes, I hope that I'm a role model for my girls. They came to me last mm-hmm. year to
Why did they
sponsor.
Pick you?
I don't know.
Why did you pick Amy for this?
I picked Ms. Stalker because I had her the year prior as a teacher, and she just seemed to be a very empowered woman. She seemed like this was something she was passionate about, and it was someone who we could go to, and I knew that she would help us go places as a club, and she's obviously proven that.
And it started small, right? It started with just a few girls?
Yeah, it was three girls came to me and asked me to sponsor this group, and I think we were maybe five or six in the very beginning.
And now where are you?
We're about up to 50, I think.
Wow. So yeah. So how did it spread? Just word of mouth?
I think word of mouth. And this year, girls are just really, really excited to be part of the group.
What do they say about it? What's the feedback you're getting?
They love it. They want to be more involved. They want, you know, what are we going to do?
And what are you doing? And there was the trip to Rwanda, but what else does Girl Up do?
Well, we advocate. So we want to go to one of the elementary schools and have like a little after school thing for the kids that are interested. We're thinking we're going to start doing a microloan for females in a less developed country. So then they pay it back and then you loan it out again. We raise money too for the actual Girl Up Foundation to help girls.
Let's talk about that aspect of microfinance, because I think the data on that is pretty conclusive, that if you give a microloan to a woman in a third world country, there is a ripple effect that's much more powerful than if you gave the money to a man, actually. Can you explain Absolutely. Why that is?
Well, women are actually running most of the small businesses and the farms in less developed countries, so if you empower them with a microloan, they can make money. They invest back into the community at a 90% rate, where men, I think, are at 35%. So it really does help their community if they're allowed to own a business.
And not only that, from the education side, Professor Jackson, let's talk about why the UN, the State Department, and Girl Up, and JU are so engaged in this issue of educating women and girls in developing countries, why that's so important.
Education is power. Having that information is powerful, and it's transformative. All of us carry, many of us carry all of the information in the world in our pockets, in our smartphones. But you have to be able to read to access that information. You have to be able to critically think and problem solve to access that information. And that comes from a good quality education, from teachers who are passionate and care about the entire development of their students. Not just whether they read and write, but whether they are ethical people, how they problem solve, how they critically think. And that's obviously the role of the liberal arts education and why I love being a part of Jacksonville University and why Amy is such a great role model for mm-hmm. us. And I hope she sends us all her students.
Now, Fleming Island High was the only school out of the 30 U.S. students that attended this camp to send two students.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, two of my students were very interested in the camp, so they both applied, and they were both accepted, so that was awesome.
And so Monday night on the JU campus, this will be a big get-together. What all is going to be taking place? Rachel?
Well, we're going to have a presentation, or a discussion, I should say, about the camp and what Ava and I did there. We're also going to have a discussion on the gender pay gap and how we need to close it and how we can do that.
And what are some concrete steps that you see? That's something that has been an issue in this country for many decades.
Some concrete steps that I see.
No pressure or anything. You're just a junior in high school, but you're a very smart one.
Yes. I think the fact that we're having these opportunities to join a Girl Up Club, to go to a women in science camp in Rwanda, Africa, to further our education in the STEM fields, that's a big step, I think. We're being educated. We're learning how to become leaders, as I mentioned before. And I think that's a huge step mm-hmm. to having girls get the confidence to go off and do these things.
Yeah, confidence is key. Amy Stalker, how do the boys in your school react to this club?
So we are getting a lot of boys that are joining.
They're part of it too.
They are. Yeah. Boys are welcome to join.
And what are their thoughts and comments as become part of this whole discussion?
I think, well, most of them are my students too that were previously. So they've learned about the gender gap worldwide and they're just interested in empowering their women. I mean, when they grow up, I think they want to marry women that are equal in every way.
Professor Jackson, that's such an important point because women can talk about these issues, but they need male allies. That's a pretty important piece of this in
they
any kind of
do.
Movement, any kind of equality movement.
They certainly do. And as I mentioned before, you know, I try to treat all my students the same. I try to treat all of my students as though they can, in fact, succeed. And again, try not to pay attention to their gender. But yes, behind every powerful woman is a supportive man. I got a call yesterday afternoon to come out and be on First Coast Connect. And the first call was to my husband. Hey, can you take the kids to their physicals this tomorrow morning so I can go do this on behalf of girls and science? And he goes, yeah, sure, I can do that, honey. So it takes more than one to be successful, whether that's the man supporting the woman or the woman supporting the man. It takes a real partnership. And being good role models in marriage, being good role models as coworkers, when you need help at work, you can ask a woman, you can ask a man. But when you see people working together and collaboratively and supporting on you no matter what your gender is, then that sends a message, a very powerful message. It may not be overt, but it's a powerful message that we're all equal and we all count and we're all important.
So it will be a collaborative Monday night. This event is happening Monday night on the JU campus in the Gooding Auditorium. What else do people need to know?
6:30.
6:30 p.m. if they want to come attend. This is open to the public?
It is open. We'd like everybody to come and have a discussion.
All right. Well, thanks for discussing it with all of with us here. We appreciate you all being here.
Thank you.
We were joined by Karen Jackson, professor at JU, Amy Stalker, teacher and sponsor of the Girl Up Club at Fleming Island High School, her student Rachel Thompson, club president. Again, this discussion taking place Monday night, the Girl Up UN Association discussion Monday night at JU. Much more still to come later. The Spectator with a look at your weekend will also take a trip up to Jekyll Island for their big Shrimp and Grits Festival. But up next, it's a big advance for people on the First Coast with autism. We're back right after this.
Before becoming an ordained Lutheran minister, Nadia Bolz-Weber was a stand-up comic with a drinking problem. She founded a church in Denver she named the House for All Sinners and Saints. Like Bolz-Weber, many of her parishioners suffer from addictions, compulsion, and depression. We'll talk with her on the next Fresh Air. She's written a memoir called Accidental Saints. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
A confused debate over the Iran nuclear deal ends in Congress. The story is just beginning.
Getting the deal was difficult. Winning acceptance in Congress was harder. But we've seen the easier parts.
I'm Steve Inskeep. We'll discuss the past, present, and future of the Iran deal. It's a special broadcast from NPR News.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
join WJCT for a dinner honoring this year's American Graduate Champions, Wednesday, September 30th, 6 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Hear their stories and learn how their efforts are making a difference in increasing graduation rates here on the First Coast. For more information and tickets, 358-6327, WJCT.org.
Did you ever sneak under the big top, sail through the air on the flying trapeze, and stick your head in the lion's mouth? Well, this week, you can. On the next Snap Judgment from PRX and NPR, we proudly present Circus Circus. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's a major announcement today from the Jacksonville Speech and Hearing Center, and good news for local patients on the autism spectrum. Here to tell us all about it, Mike Hallin, President and CEO of Jack's Speech and Hearing Center. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Michelle Killian, she's President of IBCCES. That's the International Board of Credentialing and Continuing Education Standards.
Hello.
So official.
Yes.
Thanks for being with us. So, Mike, let's start with you. The Speech and Hearing Center has earned a very important certification of autism care from Michelle's organization. What does this designation mean, and why is this such a big deal for local families who have someone with autism?
The certified autism center designation means that at least 80% of our staff has gone through the training and met the standards for certification of the IBCCES, and our clinicians actually receive a certified autism specialist credential. We've had three of our audiologists and five of our speech language pathologists that have received that designation, and then the rest of the staff an autism certificate. But what this will enable us to do is better serve a population that we are already serving. Approximately 20% of the children that are seen by our speech-language pathologists now are on the autism spectrum disorder. So this will allow us to serve them that much more effectively.
Let's talk about that, Michelle. How will this help children who need these services, children with autism?
The Certified Autism Center designation shows that the staff has gone through extra training in autism. So when a parent brings their child in, they're going to know that from the time the receptionist, even when they walk in the door, everyone there understands their child.
Which can be so difficult, Mike, because communication is always, not always, but so often for people on the autism spectrum, one of the biggest challenges they have.
Well, autism is most often manifested in communication challenges, and certainly that is something that our speech-language pathologists experience. Now, our efforts with every child we see is to provide that compassionate level of care and family involvement, but this, you know, really takes it to a whole different level. And why is that important? You know, one in 68 children are now being diagnosed with autism. Mm-hmm. If you listen to the presidential or watch the presidential debate last night, it became the center of focus in an exchange between Donald Trump and Rand Paul and Ben Carson. And, you know, a lot of the misinformation that still exists about the link between vaccines and autism.
Yes, I noticed that did come up last night. Michelle, one in 68 children now, five times more common among boys than girls. And research is still trying to figure out why.
Right. It's an international problem. The global rate is at 1%. The United States is one in 68. This is something that every community really needs to focus on.
Right. And there are so many families dealing with children on the spectrum. Let's explain a little bit about that, because it is a spectrum. Some children are more affected than others by issues with social interaction, communication, and physical problems, digestive issues. In that sense, it can be a whole body disorder.
Right. And we have 10 areas of autism competency that we ask that an individual look into, and that's our part of our competency exam, which cover all those various issues that go along with autism.
This was a really tough certification to get, wasn't it?
It was. We're very proud of that. And, you know, we have been for a long time. We were started 66 years ago. We have been the only nonprofit in North Florida accredited to provide both speech, language services and audiology services. This really adds another niche and a valuable service that we can provide to that population.
So the Speech and Hearing Center now, the only nonprofit in the area to undergo this kind of training. But as you said, about 20% of your child patients are on the autism spectrum. That's not all you do.
Let's talk a little bit more
about what you do.
We provide a broad range of services to individuals of all ages. Our focus with children is really on the speech side and helping them to overcome communication challenges so that they can be ready to start kindergarten on par with their kindergarten classmates, able to communicate, able to learn. As you know, to start out in school with some kind of a stigma, to be different from everybody else is really a challenge. So the children is, and the speech is the one side, but we also help people of all ages with hearing. And that's critical, as well as we're seeing more and more people that are experiencing hearing loss. 60% of our veterans are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq with hearing loss. So that's our bread and butter.
And what are the main modalities you use to help people?
Well, first of all, we have fabulous clinicians, and as I mentioned, we have two audiologists with about 45 years of experience and tremendous speech language pathologists. We also have a partnership with JU, which I know was part of the earlier segment, but JU now has a fabulous speech language pathology program. Chris Sapienza, the dean of the College of Health Sciences, who started the program, is on our board, and we have a number of externs from JU at any time. But we're providing comprehensive hearing evaluations, speech evaluations. We actually go out in the community and provide a lot of screenings. Florida Blue, the Chartran Foundation, and Medtronic have all been instrumental in providing funding so we can go out and diagnose those kids, because so many children are undiagnosed, and that's the important key part.
Michelle, how important is that, getting a correct diagnosis for your child? There are a lot of people listening. And by the way, if you have a child with autism or you're curious about this topic, the number to join us with your question or thought is 549-2937. Many parents might not have a correct diagnosis for their child.
Sure, a diagnosis is important, but even more important is starting the intervention process. The earlier you start, the better. So if you know your child has communication problems, contacting a center such as the Jacksonville Speech and Hearing Center is a great place to start, mm-hmm. as even while you're working on the diagnosis.
Sure. And one of the things that I've noticed you say that a certified autism center provides is no sensory overload. Kids on the spectrum often have issues with sensory integration, and they can feel bombarded by stimuli, sights and sounds. It can be so overwhelming for a child. How do you compensate for that?
Knowing the problems that go along with autism can help a center to brainstorm possibilities of how they can address those situations. Maybe having a special quiet room if a child's upset, a place for them to go to calm down mm-hmm. without a lot of sensory issues, or a place for a sensory break can mm-hmm. be really helpful.
Yeah. Minimally disruptive treatments. What does that mean, Mike?
That means we want to create the least amount of disturbance and not trigger, not do anything that would trigger a response. So that quiet room that Michelle mentioned is very, very important. And that's something that we have established within our office.
549-2937, Marianne in St. Augustine. Hi, Marianne. Go ahead.
Hi there. I have a question. When my son was about 3-4 years old, his preschool teacher picked up that he was what they called speech delayed. And we actually ended up, at that time we lived in Broward County. Broward County had a program where all of his therapy, all of his testing was done through the public schools. I was wondering if we have anything like that in this area.
I don't know, Marianne, but thanks for the question. Mike Howland.
Well, that is the case. In our area, the public schools are the main provider of those speech-language services once a child is enrolled in public school.
So and what you provide is a much more intensive one-on-one focus.
That's right. We would oftentimes take referrals from schools that where children need more services than they can get through those schools. And then obviously that preschool range is not one that's covered by the school system. So that's where we work with a lot of preschools and in an effort to help diagnose and then provide therapies to those children.
Well, Michelle, only more children will be needing this type of intervention because, as you said, so many children now have been diagnosed, sadly.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike Allen is president of the Jacksonville Speech and Hearing Center. Michelle Killian, president of the Credentialing Board, certifying the center as an autism care center. And a look at ideas for your weekend right after this.
Let's say there's a mom-and-pop shop smack dab in the middle of a rapidly gentrifying neighborhood. How are they going to stay relevant?
Gluten-free for your pet. Can you believe that? It's got no corn or wheat or soy. This is $16.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's all about the gluten-free options, people. Next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is Watch Officer Miller Norton with the Duval County Emergency Preparedness Division. Disasters can strike with little to no notice. Create your disaster kit now, including water, non-perishable food, batteries, flashlight, weather radio, and important documents. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
Listeners love Relax Radio.
My name is Harry Reagan. I got hooked immediately because it's just the kind of radio station I've always been looking for and never found until now.
When you make a $120 gift to WJCT, you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 or go online to wjct.org/relax for more information.
Welcome back. He's a UNF professor, a member of the city's Human Rights Commission, and a leading voice on interfaith issues in our area. In today's edition of First Coast Success, Karen Bruni Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record speaks with Parvez Ahmed.
Parvez Ahmed is well known in Jacksonville. He is a University of North Florida professor of finance, a former U.S. Fulbright scholar, and a community leader on civil discourse. Ahmed is a two-term member of the Jacksonville Human Rights Commission and a frequent writer and speaker about Islam and the American Muslim experience. Last year, OneJax awarded him the Humanitarian Silver Medal for his work toward overcoming bias, bigotry, and racism in Jacksonville. Parvez Ahmed, welcome to First Coast Success.
Glad to be here.
Well, in the time you've been here, you've taken a highly visible role in Jacksonville. What motivates you to do so?
Well, part of it is, you know, we as members of the human race, we do have an obligation towards each other, regardless of what racial background we belong to, regardless of what national identity we identify with or our religion. We all have an obligation towards each other, and it becomes more so in a globalized village like today. And part of it is also my upbringing. I was raised in a family where having a social responsibility ethic was important. And it's part of my faith. So all of that combines to kind of inspire me to try to do as best as I can.
Talk about your family growing up. Was it a big family? And who were your mentors or who was your mentor?
I was the only child of my parents. So from that perspective, my immediate family was small, but I grew up in India with a lot of extended family around me, lots of cousins and uncles and aunts. A weekend gathering could easily be 20 plus people, and that's just being very modest. with my extended family, we have people spanning all ends of this political spectrum, from the hard left, almost communist left, to the Islamist right. And so our family gatherings were very interesting conversations. And being in that setting kind of gave me the ability to have the patience to hear all sides of an argument and also understand the power of a civil discourse in trying to find common ground with others. And that's what I try to do with my civil discourse work. People naturally have differences in opinion, but how can we figure out where the common ground is? And what can we do once we discover that common ground? And that's an important question that I try to wrestle with. And I'm very fortunate in this city that there are many, many good people that are engaged in this work.
Well, in volunteering and taking a leadership role in Jacksonville, and especially as a mayoral appointee to the Human Rights Commission, you've gone through some challenging city council hearings and other events. And in one well-publicized event, a member of council asked you to pray to your God. And during public comments, you were criticized for your former chairmanship for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. And how do you respond to those questions and comments? And are you surprised by those?
I think the comment about pray to your God was a very inartful comment. I don't think so. Councilman Redman meant it the way it came across. He apologized for that. He sent me a letter. It was a very gracious letter. I thanked him for that apology. So I think we have all moved on from that. I know that incident gets replayed a lot in people's conversations and in people's mind. But I think it was a moment in our history that we have gone past. And I hope that because of the challenges and the conversations that it has created, I do believe that we as a city, we are better off. As to my chairmanship of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, it was quite unfortunate how that association became front and center in the conversation, because nothing about my chairmanship itself was in contention. In other words, nobody ever said that you did this or you said this, or the organization did this when you were the chair. That was either controversial or could be a source of not approving somebody to the Human Rights Commission. It was all based on past, about some employee in the organization did something, or somebody in the organization said something, or the organization itself did something, often before I joined the organization. So it was kind of disturbing because it was very un-American in my view. It was guilt by association. We as Americans, we take pride in not doing that. We try to judge people by their individual abilities and their character, not based on who they associate with.
Now, Jacksonville, we have a new administration in Jacksonville. We're going into another 4 years, and the motto for Mayor Curry is One Jacksonville, One City. How do you see yourself as becoming a part of that on the Human Rights Commission and in any other positions that you might take?
I think it's a very noble aspiration. The challenge is, how do we get there? We see that Jacksonville is a divided city between races. On religious grounds, we are often quite divided, and also, perhaps more so, increasingly divided along our economic lines, income inequality, and the social disproportionate benefits that it gives to certain people and the disproportionate benefits that it does not accrue to certain people is a big challenge in the city. So it's great to have that vision. I think the challenge will be, how do we accomplish it? It will certainly take mayoral leadership, and I wish Mayor Curry the best. The challenge will be, how can we all work with each other, cooperate with each other, to make this vision a reality for everybody, so that everybody has a shared responsibility and the prosperity of our region is shared among people. And we can then move past some of our divisive rhetoric, some of the divisive history of the city, and finally be a city and a community that we all deserve.
Do you have any political aspirations?
No, none. Zero.
Well, what's next for you?
I'm writing books. I have a couple of book contracts that I need to get done. And then I want to also spend a little bit more time traveling, particularly to parts of the world that helps me with my writing about Islam and the American Muslim experience, not only overseas, but also around the country.
Well, Parvez Ahmed, finance professor at the University of North Florida and community leader, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Thanks a lot, Karen.
Read a transcript of Karen's talk with Parvez Ahmed in today's Daily Record. And we're back in a moment.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
WJCT is proud to be your number one preset for your evening commute. But if you only turn on 89.9 when you're driving, here's what you're missing.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for
listening. This is The World.
Spend your afternoons with WJCT for unique conversations about the topics of the day. Join us weekdays from 2 to 6 for The Takeaway, The World, and All Things Considered. It's the smart way to spend your afternoon.
Welcome back. Well, the Shrimp and Grits Festival, the 10th annual, is kicking off this weekend on Jekyll Island. Nancy Kring Rowan, events manager for Jekyll Island Authority, is on the line now with a preview. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, good morning.
Good to talk to you. So this is exciting, the 10th anniversary celebration for a big event, the Jekyll Island Shrimp and Grits Festival. Sounds delicious. What all is going to be happening?
Well, we have fabulous cooking competitions and live music, children's entertainment, over 100 high-end arts and crafts vendors, and a craft brew fest. You name it, we have it going on.
You really want to turn it all out for the 10th anniversary. Has it gotten bigger and better every year?
It definitely has. We're expecting over 30,000 people to join us for the weekend. We're quite excited about that. It has started out from being just a one-day event on the main lawn with maybe 6 or 7 vendors to what I just described. It
right.
takes over most of our historic district here on Jekyll Island.
It is in the historic district. We need to point out, too, this is free.
It is. I mean, of course, we're a state park, and we do have a parking fee for people to come onto the island, but it is free. We ask all of our guests to please park at the airport, and we'll shuttle you in on luxury buses. And from the minute you get off, your experience starts, so you'll be able to stroll through all of the arts and craft vendors and participate in various shows. They're actually free. All the stages are free, to include the kids' stage, two musical stages. We have an experienced Jekyll Island tent with some really dynamic programs going on in there, as well as the Southern Living tent, where they'll have cooking demos and lifestyle demos.
Wow. So if people have never been to Jekyll Island, which is such a gem, this is a good weekend to check it out.
I do say it is. It's probably the best weekend to check it out.
It's the 10th annual Shrimp and Grits Festival on Jekyll Island, kicking off tomorrow and running through Sunday. 3 days of fun and delicious food, live music, a kids zone, lots happening. Nancy Kring Rowan on the line for us from Jekyll Island. Thanks so much for giving us a few minutes. Have a great time.
Thank you, and I hope to see you out there.
And finally, this hour, from Shrimp and Grits to Luke Bryan and more. Lots to do across the First Coast this weekend. Here, as she is every Thursday, to take us all around town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, thespectator.com's Carrie Speckman.
Yay!
Here today. And are you going to this Shrimp and Grits extravaganza?
I was drooling all over this microphone.
I know.
Might want to change the sponge or whatever this thing is.
You know, I've never been to Jekyll Island. This
I
might be
either.
The thing that gets me there.
My brother lived in St. Simons, and I would pass Jekyll Island every time.
Yeah, I drive when I'm heading north. I see the exit. I think one of these days
one
I got to go
days.
Over there.
And you know what? Shrimp and grits and craft beer is going to get me there.
And then
the luxury shuttle that also.
That could do it.
Yeah.
That could be.
Done.
I'm
going.
There will be. And who knows? Maybe there'll be some Southern style celebrities you can take selfies with at this
who
affair.
Who knows? There will be selfies.
Speaking
taken.
Of celebrities,
don't you worry.
Are you going to the Luke Bryan show tonight at Veterans Arena, Miss Speckman?
Well, I'm not. Are we going to listen?
Yes, we'll listen to him as you go along. Yeah, little Luke Bryan.
I was going to say, is it a song that I know? But
Sean Birch pitched something that he thought you would like.
I won't tell you what our email exchange was before.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm not really a country music fan.
Uh-huh.
He is hot. I will say that.
You think he's a good-looking guy?
Oh, yeah. And he shakes his booty a lot, and he actually throws, like, cans of beer into the audience, which is kind of funny. I have seen him live, but I will not be there.
Tonight, Luke Bryan with special guests Randy Houser and Dustin Lynch at the arena. Speaking of booty, Bill Bellamy, the guy who supposedly made up the term booty call.
I know.
He's in town.
Yes. He did MTV Beach House. He's done a lot of things.
Very
he's in the
funny
Brothers
guy.
Any given Sunday. He will be here at the Comedy Zone tonight through Saturday.
Yeah, that's tonight.
I don't know how that we would verify if he coined booty call. But
according to his website, he made that up on an appearance on HBO's Def Comedy Jam.
I mean, who's gonna
deny it?
I don't have any evidence otherwise.
Yeah, there's nothing proving him wrong.
No.
So it's Bill Bellamy. Also tonight.
Booty call.
Yeah, also tonight, my 12-year-old daughter is begging me to take her to see 9 to 5 the Musical at the Alhambra Theater.
I should have told Sean to play some of that.
Yeah, I know. Who can forget that Dolly Parton song?
I took a quiz, whatever person.
Which 9 to 5er are
yes.
you?
Guess which one I was.
Dolly Parton.
No.
Lily Tomlin.
Yes.
You were the Lily Tomlin.
Violet. I believe her name is Violet.
Well, she was sort of the leader, so that's good.
She was the cranky, bossy,
but she was sort of the ringleader,
yes.
the brains behind
I'm
it
not
all.
Really a leader, though.
Yeah, you are.
I'm not a follower, but I'm not
yeah,
a leader.
Well, it's opening week at the Alhambra, 9 to 5, the Musical,
yes.
And I've heard great things about this. I've heard that the tickets are going like crazy
yes.
for this show.
I have heard that the music is amazing. Like, Dolly, I believe, wrote all the music, which
yeah,
would
yeah.
make sense.
So go see it. 9 to 5, the Musical, opening this weekend at the Alhambra.
Yes.
Friday night, watch some of the most talented skaters in the world. This is roller derby at the Prime Osborne. Roller derby at the Prime Osborne.
Yes, it's
wow.
like a big, this is a giant tournament. It's the 2015 International WFTDA-D1 playoffs right here in Jacksonville.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. So
that's pretty cool.
And it's Friday. It's like starts at 10 a.m. They have morning and afternoon bouts.
And these female roller derby teams have cool names. They have
actually, there's a lovely article in Folio about the co-captain Fancy Schmancy.
Fancy Schmancy, exactly.
And what's funny, I wrote an article about them once for Jacksonville Magazine, and I asked them, like, oh, what's – they don't know each other's real names. They will, like, call her Fancy.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know her real
yeah,
name.
Yeah, it's all nicknames. So that's Friday night at the Prime
no,
Osborne.
No, Friday. It starts at 10 a.m.
Oh, it starts during the day.
And then they have night bouts also.
Got it. So. Now, I need to throw in something to your list because Saturday
throw
night.
Throw it, sister.
I'm throwing. Saturday night here at WJCT, it will be.
What could it be?
First Coast Dancing with the Stars.
I know. I'm so sad. I'm going to miss it.
I know. You're a former winner, of course.
Well, but not of this one. This is a different one.
This is a different organization. However, two local politicians
are
dancing.
I am going to say something. I'm team Aaron Bean.
Well, let me just say.
Team Bean.
I'm being nonpartisan here.
JU. We're JU buddies.
I know. You love Aaron Bean. Now, Senator Audrey Gibson is
yes.
dancing. So is Senator Aaron Bean. And I did get the chance to chat with Aaron Bean a little bit about this. Take a listen.
There are 11 so-called stars. I'm one of them. Senator Audrey Gibson is another. And there's a handful of chefs and CEOs and bankers and from all walks of life, all over Jacksonville. You're going to compete this weekend at Channel 7 Studios in Metro Park. It is really much more intense than I ever thought.
That's Aaron Bean, Audrey Gibson, our own board member, Shavara Oren, many
yes.
others will be tripping the light fantastic
Saturday
night.
I actually talked to him the other day, and he said Channel 7. I'm like, you just dated yourself.
People, well, hey, there are still people
still
that call Everbank Field the Gator Bowl.
Yeah, that's true.
You know
that's
what good. I mean?
That's you're like, well, what is it called?
Yeah, people still call us that, but that's okay.
That's all right.
So that's Saturday night. Now, also Saturday, it's the Mad Dad's Ride for Life happening.
Yes, this is a 50-mile ride. They're starting at Bay Meadows Harley-Davidson, and it is a ride 50 miles through the city where murders have taken place.
And this is a serious event, actually. This
yes.
is Mad Dad's trying to raise awareness about homicide in Jacksonville.
Exactly. It's
yeah.
$10 per driver, $5 per rider. You can register at the Harley-Davidson Bay Meadows Location at 9.
Yeah.
Kickstands up at 11.
Yeah, get out and support Mad Dads. And then a couple of other things. Brewval, a North Florida beer experience. Brewval, not Duval.
Sorry,
it's Brewval.
I had to do that.
This is happening also Saturday out of the beaches at the Seawalk Pavilion.
Noon to 10. Yeah. They will have 20 breweries, 60 varieties. I think it's going to be a little crazy out there.
Last but not least, Sunday, it's the Jaguars at home against Miami.
Yes, yeah. At 4:05.
Let's hope they win one.
Sure.
Let's see a win here.
Let's hope they win a lot.
I know. So what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to the Shrimp and Grits.
Shrimp and Grits. Look out for the pink-haired spectator. You will stand out in that crowd.
Exactly. And you know what? Like, I wonder if Blake's going to get some grief about that comment he made about kindergarten. He said fans talking about plays as like kindergartners telling college students what to do or something like that.
Oh, Blake Bortles? Yeah. He's getting a little heat for that, isn't he?
Yeah. Leon Searcy put something on Twitter like, that's like him driving his big wheel to the stadium and pretending it's a car. So I was trying to talk all like Leon Searcy, man.
You need to give Blake some social media consultation. There you go. I've crafted a whole new career for you.
Go on my Facebook and I have Facebook, my website. I have several articles about him. Which social media is the least of his problems.
Go to thespectator.com for a list of full weekend events and have some shrimp for me if I don't make it.
Oh,
there.
I will.
Yeah, and that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a program. You can subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and hear all of your favorite newsmakers. Well, next on Diane Rehm, GOP presidential candidates gathered in California for their second debate. Diane has analysis of how they fared and implications on the Republican nomination for president. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.